Good morning, everyone. Welcome into Coffee and Co-Sleeping. I'm Amanda. Today, Adriana couldn't join us, but I am joined by Michelle Kenny with Peace and Parenting. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm so happy to have you. I know we were talking a little bit before we hit record that I have a daughter. My daughter's almost four, so I'm in the thick of toddler parenting. My daughter has a very big personality, which I love, but we go through it sometimes. So
yeah.
Before we dive in and really start talking, could you just tell our listeners a little bit about you and what it is that you do?
Sure. My name's Michelle and I run Peace and Parenting, which is an online platform on Instagram and also Facebook. And I have a podcast and mostly I'm a parenting coach. So I help parents find more connection in their parenting and really move away from punishments and threats and bribes and try to parent without those things and really move into using connection instead. I'm also a former teacher. I was in the public classroom for 13 years and a high school counselor. And I'm a mom of two girls who are 16 and a half and 13 and a half. And I can't believe they're that old.
Oh, wow. So I don't want to put my age out there, but I'm a millennial. So I was raised, you know, our parents, it was a lot of very like, I wouldn't even say boundaries, but really like strict consequences, like mm-hmm. a lot of yelling. I remember a couple times being hit growing up, but I had soap put in my mouth, things now that, you know, if we were to do that to our children now, people, it would be, you know, deemed unacceptable, but it was a different time back in the 90s. So I wanted to talk a little bit about why consequences such as hitting, we personally don't do time out in my house, why those things can cause more harm than good to our children.
I mean, when we think about it, consequences or punishments, and I'd like to clear that up because I believe in my mind, punishments are really consequences. Now, there's some controversy out there that consequences are different because some people believe in this idea of logical consequences, and I think we can get to that in a minute. But what consequences do is they inflict pain on a child, emotional pain, physical pain. And when you inflict pain on a person, how does that person feel about you? Likely not very good. And so if a child doesn't feel good about the relationship that they share with their parent, how will cooperation go? How will living together in a home go? Will we get a lot of pushback from a child who feels angry with us because we're using our power and our control to try to get them to do things? It isn't a good way to be in a relationship with anyone if you think about it.
So when you talk about logical consequences, is that like, for an example, like if a child is climbing on a chair and you ask them to stop, the logical consequence would be for them to fall off the chair and hurt themselves? Or is that more of a natural consequence?
I mean, that's definitely a natural consequence. I wouldn't necessarily say that's the best natural consequence because it can be dangerous. We want to stay mm-hmm. away from the dangerous natural consequences. But a lot of people will say that a logical consequence is like if a kid is playing in the water table and they're splashing you with the water, then you take the water table away.
Okay.
And
that makes
that
sense.
Might seem like a logical consequence, but then how does the child feel when you take the water table away? Is there a reason that the child is splashing the water? Are they dysregulated? What's going below the surface? And can we use connection to make them feel better and have a discussion around the water table and what's appropriate as opposed to just taking it away?
And I think oftentimes I see kind of on social media and just within like other parents that I know, they kind of have boundaries and consequences mixed up a bit and kind of that they're the same because we can set boundaries around the water table without having to take it away. And I know me personally, like I'm the parent that, like I told you before we hit record, my daughter is almost four. I don't correct a lot of behavior and I've been told that I'm like a pushover or, you know, I'm letting her do whatever she wants or like that I'm passive. And it's like, no, it's just one, I don't want to hear my voice all day correcting. Don't do that. Get down. Don't do that. And she's three, you know, she's not going to be 25 and smearing yogurt on her face at her wedding because she's doing it at three. Like if we're outside doing the water table, that probably wouldn't be a behavior I would correct because mm-hmm. I'm like, I feel so often. And, you know, this inner child coming out in me working through that, it's so much of like, we were corrected all the time growing up. We always heard no, you know, kids, that's all they hear most times. No, you can't do that. No, no. So I try to stray away from that and kind of just let her be a kid because it's such a short blink. And you were just saying that. I mean, your girls now are teenagers, so it goes by so quick.
It does go by quick. And you're smart not to overcorrect her because what correction tells a child is that they're wrong or what they did was inappropriate and that mistakes are not feasible or accepted. And so then we can get a child who really leans into perfectionism, or we can get a child who just leans into like stuffing their own feelings or their own ideas about things because they're worried about disappointing their parent. And so the correction, most kids, and at 4 years old, your daughter knows right from wrong. If she does something that's not correct, quote unquote, she knows. She doesn't need you to tell her afterwards that it's the wrong thing to do. She chose the wrong thing to do because she's not doing well in that moment. It's not because she doesn't know right from wrong.
And I always say too, I want my daughter to do what is right because she knows the difference between right and wrong, not because she's fearful of how me or my husband will react and have that, you know, fear-based parenting, like, oh, you know, if I do this wrong, you know, mom's going to yell, mom's going to hit me. I don't want that. And I'm glad that you mentioned the whole idea of perfectionism, because I know obviously I know a bit about you, but you're a recovering perfectionist. And I like to say I'm in recovery. I'm working towards saying that I'm a recovering perfectionist. It's impossible some days to kind of live up to the standards that we set for ourselves. And as an adult, I know how crummy that feels. So I'm really glad that you brought it up, because so much of my parenting journey is to not have my daughter feel that way, because as an adult, we know how unsettling that is. So I want to talk a little bit about, a lot of our parents who are listening do have young children, do have toddlers. Most of us have been stuck at home with our children, you know, for a significant amount of time the past couple of years. So how do we effectively parent the child in front of us without punishment, without hitting, without yelling? Because a lot of older people around me, my in-laws, stuff like that, they go right to like, oh, they, you know, they need their bottom hit, or they need to, you know, I've had patients at work say that, like, oh, sometimes you just need to pull the belt out. And I'm like, I don't even own a belt. Never mind if I did, it wouldn't be used for, you know,
for
hitting.
Beating my child.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm so triggered by that, by random strangers telling me that. So how do we kind of, I don't want to say get the behavior we want out of our children, but how do we teach them right from wrong and really build that foundation?
So I think a couple of things. One thing, teaching right from wrong really comes, 80% of what children learn, social scientists have found this number, and I like to use it a lot, but 80% of what children learn, they find, is what's modeled to them, not what's told to them, and not what you think you're teaching them when you give them a consequence. So we think, oh, if I give the child a consequence because they hit their sister, that somehow they'll realize that they're not supposed to hit their sister because I put them in timeout. But that doesn't teach a child not to hit their sister. They learned how to interact with their brothers and sisters and all kinds of people by watching us do it the right way over and over and over again. And eventually they'll get there, but they're immature. Their prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. And so they're going to make big mistakes, and that's okay. What we really want to do in connective parenting, and that's what I teach, I'm trained through hand-in-hand parenting, is to build the relationship. What we want to do is use connection to build a really strong bonded relationship. And we can't have a strong bonded relationship when we're using punishments and consequences, because they erode the relationship. And if we have a strong bonded relationship, our child's brain can work better. The prefrontal cortex, the thinking brain, stays online more. And when it does, we have kids that make better choices more often. It's never going to be perfect, because we're dealing with immature people. We are also flawed individuals, and we have human interaction, and there always will be dysregulation, but we have a better chance of getting our child to do the right thing because they feel good about the relationship they share with us.
I love that, because I try so hard to model. I know sometimes when I get really overstimulated and triggered myself, I go right to kind of being short, sometimes yelling, and kind of getting in my own head a bit. So when I get like that, it's kind of like, ooh, nope, I don't want her to see this, and kind of have to regulate myself, because you're right. You know, our children, they're still learning. Their brains are not even fully formed. But even me as an adult, I have my own flaws. And we kind of talked in the past, Adrienne and I, about our children almost having, as they age, their own things that they have to work through. But we hope it's just not the same kind of traumas that we now as adults have to work through. First off, everyone, if you are not following Michelle, I need you to stop, you know, pause this episode and follow, because the content that you share is so jam-packed, so informative. And you had a reel about top tips for cooperation with our children. And it was one that I saved and I go back to actually quite often. So could we kind of dive in and talk a bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, you want to make sure you have a good, if you don't have a good connection with your kid, there's no chance of getting organic cooperation. Sure, you can bribe and threaten them into it, but you want to make sure that you're not using punishments, that you're putting the relationship first, and that you're diving into the ideas and the tools of connection. That's first and foremost. Secondly, if you ask a child to do something and they tell you flat out no, or they ignore you, do not keep asking them over and over again, because it will just make you mad and it will make them mad, and they can't hear you in that moment. They're not doing well in that moment. So can you stop and say, okay, how can I get connected to this kid? Can you look at your four-year-old and be like, who wants to do 3 rounds of freeze tag? I'm going to turn the music on. We're going to do music freeze tag. And can you just break it up for 5 minutes, get connected to your kid, and then return to your ask and say, hey, do you want to help me put your shoes on? If we can get them connected and feeling better, they might be able to respond better to us. So those two are really important. And then, you know, I think it's like, how are you asking your child? Are you asking them from 3 rooms away, screaming, put your shoes on, we're late for school? That's probably not the best way to ask kids to do something. And I think if I could add a fourth, which this about real only said three, but I've got a lot. But if you could add a fourth, I think the other idea is that, you know, when are you asking? And are you asking a hard ask? Like a hard ask is brush your teeth, go to bed, put your shoes on, go. All the transitions, especially for toddlers, are the hard asks. So are you asking them when they're fed, when they're doing well, when they're happy? Or are you asking them at their worst? Because you likely will get a no that way.
I love that you use the example of putting on the shoes, because it's always the dang shoes. It's always the shoes. And we have a mudroom where all the shoes go. We don't wear shoes in our house, but yet we can never, never find it. Like, we never know where they are. Yeah, I didn't know that there was more than three. No, I love
that. Oh, there's millions.
Oh, gosh. I know for me, I love what I like to do a lot is I set a timer. I find that is something that I saw my sister-in-law use when she was visiting, and she kind of got, I don't want to say it this way, but got the result that she wanted by, you know, cleaning up. And, you know, her son really wanted to keep playing. And it was like, let's make a deal. We can set the timer for 3 minutes and then we need to move to the next thing. And I think we kind of get into that mentality that kids are resilient. I hate that saying because I don't believe that. We kind of just hurry them through life. Like, okay, brush your teeth, go to bed. Like, let's, because we, at the end of the day or whatever it is, we want that minute to ourselves, or we want to get what we need to get done. Because me also working on being a perfectionist, but I'm also working on that heavy to-do list and trying to clear it all day, and that mindset that I need to be productive. So I kind of rush through some of those transitions, and I'm an adult who doesn't do well with being rushed or going through transitions. Yeah. So what makes me think that my three-year-old's going to be like, yep, let's do it.
No problem, mom. You look like you're busy. Let me help you out.
Yeah. And then the mornings were always, I work part-time. I'm habitually late. Like, I just can't, I have poor time management, like point blank. I have no excuse. So in the mornings I'm like, okay, hurry up, buckle in, do this. I was like, because we're running late. And my daughter the other day looked at me and she goes, why are we always running late?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Your dad asked me that quite often. I don't know. And I told her, I looked at her. I said that. I was like, you know what? I said, I still have a lot to work on. I said, I have really bad time management. And the whole ride to the nanny's house, we had a conversation on what time management means. And unfortunately, that's modeled behavior that she may also have poor time management, but I'm hoping my, you know, military husband can kind of instill some of that. If you're not 10 minutes early, you're late.
And I'm like, oh, that's what my dad says all the time. He's like crazy. And I have a podcast coming out on hurrying and rushing.
Oh, really? Okay.
In that's a few weeks. So you'll have to listen to it. But yes, it's all about pre-planning.
So I know a lot we do on our Instagram, we do Secret Saturdays where we kind of open the floor to our followers and they kind of just unload, you know, it's anonymous, whatever they're going through. And it really opens up some really big conversations in our DMs and in our stories. And a lot of people lately have been putting that they're dealing with mom rage and yelling, and then that kind of circle of guilt with this. And I know I said earlier, it's something that I try to stray away from, but when, you know, we're overstimulated and when we're unregulated, I think a lot of us do go right to yelling. So how can we move away from the yelling and the threats and focus more on connection?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was my big hurdles as a new mom, is that when the punishments wouldn't work and the threats and the bribes and when nothing would work, then I would just end up screaming at everyone and scaring everybody. And I think, you know, a couple of things. I think really understanding what the yelling does to our children can help us curtail it. The idea that we're putting them into fight, flight, or freeze, that we're igniting their amygdala, meaning that the alert center in their brain is firing. And the more it fires, the more stimulated it is. And then you can have a kid that's living in alert if you're screaming too much. granted, we all do it and it happens, but if you're doing it often, then you could be setting your kid up for living a life of fearfulness and being scared and being in that alert state, which we don't really want. There's also studies that tell us that yelling at your kid can be as harmful on their brain as hitting them. So while we think yelling isn't as bad, that's not necessarily the case. There's usually one child in a home, you know, we yell at them all, but usually one child is yelled at more than the others because maybe they're more strong-willed or whatnot. But the other kids are watching. And so you're informing them that you're not safe, that you're not a safe place to come to because you can't regulate yourself. And so even though those other kids are not acting out, they're highly affected by the yelling. There's much more that goes into the yelling, and there's a lot of research out there around yelling. And I think understanding what that yelling is doing can help us curtail it. I have a course called The Yelling Cure, and I break it down into three parts about how to really remedy your yelling. And the first one is in the moment, because in the moment, you have to calm down, because we cannot continue if we can't calm down. And so in that course, I have 19 things to help you calm down. And it's made up of deep breathing and mantras and walking away and just really trying to keep yourself calm. But later on, we have to really dive into, why did I yell? What was that trigger? If my child tells me no, why am I upset about that? And can we go back later and unravel that trigger so that it doesn't bother us so much later on when we're parenting? And then the third idea is, like, how can you build in connection into your home so you don't have kids who are always offline? Because if you have a child that's always offline, then it's really hard to parent them without yelling because they're always doing things that are bothersome. So can you build in these connection pieces so you can get your child feeling better? So in that course, I really delineate those three things, and it just gives you a jumpstart on how to, like, place a roadmap and a place to start.
And I think, too, that kind of goes back into what you were saying earlier, that children model the behavior that they see. And I know, you know, our children learn through playing and watching us. And it's, kids are really good at that whole saying. I heard it as a kid, do as I say, not as I do. Well, yeah. Kids are really good at doing what they see and yes. Not really listening to us. They're going to do, you know, learned behavior. And I think, you know, so many of us, our parents yelled at us, their parents yelled at them. So as now parents, most of us think, like, okay, that's how I get the result. You know, that's what my parents did, and the dreaded I turned out fine. And that goes right back into, at some point we have to break this cycle. And I really commend, you know, my generation, millennial parents, and then the generation below us, that we're kind of like, no, like, this ain't it. This isn't working. You know, how do we move past this and build more connection with our children? A story I shared on the podcast a while back, that with my in-laws, we all went on vacation, all of the kids, the parents, all of the grandkids. And I remember looking, and I said to my husband, I was like, this is it for your parents. Like, how awesome is this that, like, all of their grown children who have their own lives and live in separate places want to come back and be together and spend this time together. And I think as parents, that's what we look forward to. And that's all that we could want. So I think by building this connection early on, you know, it's hard work. And, you know, I'm the first one to be like, I need a break. I'm burnt out. I'm stressed out. But I try to remind myself that on, you know, the harder days, that in the end, this is going to have a really big payoff.
It does. And the thing is that it actually gets the behaviors to move. What I find with my clients who I work with one-on-one is that after a few weeks, they're like, oh my gosh, my kids are cooperating. You know, they're not perfect, but they're cooperating. And they're astounded that all it is building this connection piece, because kids want to do the right thing. They really do. They don't want to say no. They don't want to be dysregulated. They want to please us. Their reptilian brain is connected to us because they know they need us. The happenings of life throw them offline, and they don't know how to come back. And if we can be the people that help them come back online, then we're golden and our relationship will be preserved.
I wanted to kind of walk you through, I didn't have this in our notes here, but as we're kind of talking, my gears are spinning, and I want to kind of, if I can kind of give you an example of what happened with my daughter and I, and it's kind of like a reoccurring behavior that's been happening quite frequently, probably mm-hmm. over the last couple months, that we'll be playing, something will go wrong. She's really big into, like, magna tiles. So, like, one of them will fall down, or I won't build something right. And it turns into this really big, and I hate using, like, oh, she's a good kid, but, like, she's usually very, very cooperative. And it will turn into the stomping on the magna tiles, throwing herself down, crying, you didn't do it right. You're not going to play with these toys. And it's these big, big emotions. And, you know, I make sure I'm regulated and I kind of go through my little scripts and go through my steps, but we get to the point where there's that roadblock that I'm not getting any response because she goes, you know, for lack of better words, from 0 to 100, and it's out of nowhere. It could be, I think I'm building the doghouse correctly, but it's, whoa.
You are not alone.
Yeah, everyone's probably like, oh, yes.
Not alone. Everyone goes through that. And I think there has to be, I have another course that's out right now and you could take that too. I'll actually send that one to you as a gift, but it's called Understanding Big Emotions. The idea is not that we're trying, we have to reframe this for us because our parents would have never let us stomped around and throw magnet tiles and had a tissy fit. Our parents would have shut us down. So in our minds, we think, oh my gosh, this isn't right. My child's out of control. How do I get it to stop? And if we can reframe it and think, my child is having a really hard time. Is it related to the magnet tiles? Maybe. Or are they using the magnet tiles to get out other frustrations? Is it not even related to the magnet tiles? It's like when we're in the car and we're screaming at the guy next to us because he cut us off, but we're really screaming because we had a horrible day at work. She very well could be using the magnet tiles as a way to get her feelings out. Mm-hmm. And so if we can think about it as just letting it happen for as long and as big as she needs it to be, we can let go of this idea that there's something wrong and that we need to make it stop.
And I love that. And I try to remind myself too that like these big emotions, she's not going to unload on, you know, a friend or our nanny or the neighbor. Like it's going, you know, we're our children's safe space. So they can kind of bring their authentic emotions and big emotions to us and know that they'll be kind of held. And I just want to make sure that I'm doing everything I can. A lot of the times it's just, she'll say like, leave me alone. I'll go in the other room. And I'm like, she's literally in there crying. Like, and I'm out here and that makes me feel so bad. I'm like, this is what she asked for. This is what she needs. And then a lot of the times I'm just sitting there and my brain is so like hyper in here. So I'm always like, it's fine. Like, let's build it together. Let's work on it together. And I start going a mile a minute. And I'm like, you know, as an adult who struggles with anxiety, she's probably on the verge of a full blown panic attack. If I was like that, would I want somebody being like, I can fix it. I'd be get away from me so I can do my breathing exercises. So reframe is really important, but also just like remembering that this shit is hard, like especially a parent of a toddler. And so often I'll, you know, my husband was in the other room and I walk in and he like made a face and I was like, just gonna like let her, you know, have her moment. This is what she wants. And he even said the same thing. He's like, oh my God. He's like, I wonder if I did that as a kid, you know, what the outcome would have been there. Like it wouldn't have been good. And, you know, because of that, stray away from that because we know that that didn't accomplish anything.
You know, a lot of parents will say, my kid tells me to go away, leave me alone, I don't want you here. And I'm not so sure that they mean it. Mm-hmm. I think that they get super scared of their own feelings and that they're worried that your loving presence, you being there, is going to make them have even more feelings. So if you go away, they can calm down. But I'm not so sure that them calming down is really giving them the process that they might need. I might suggest, and you might try this, is just to say very little to her when she gets in those states. You know, a lot of us want to pepper with empathy. Oh, I understand how you feel. Oh, it's okay. I'm right here. Don't worry. You know, you're not alone. And if we're just quiet and we just hold space for the kid without really saying too much, but staying present with her, she'll probably get super mad. But she'll probably come all the way through and then she'll hug you and kiss you and say, I'm sorry, mommy. And I've seen it happen over and over and over again. We don't want to stay too close, but stay close enough that you're there with her and see if you can get her to process and come all the way through.
And I think as moms too, we just have that instinct in us that if something's wrong, we want to fix it. And I think that's just like my personality too. You know, I see a problem. I think that's just human, you know, human nature. You want to make everything better, but sometimes just being there is enough. And I know something that I struggle with is like in the beginning of the day, if I like kind of start the day off on the wrong foot, I'm like, oh, we've had too much screen time. I've been really wrapped up in, you know, getting what I need to get done. We haven't had much connection. I raised my voice. I find myself by like 1, 2 p.m. that the day for me is just like trash. Like I got to throw this whole day away. I can't reset. And I know that I'm not the only, I wanted to bring this up because I know that so many moms struggle with this. As a mom who practices, you know, responsive parenting and feels that fits, or, you know, I'm not huge on the labels, but I try to remind myself, okay, and I know you talk a lot about it, this isn't perfection. So how do we get ourselves out of that rut and kind of let our day do a 180?
I like to talk about this idea of underparenting when those days happen. Like, okay, fine, your day is screwed up. I allow you to say your day is screwed up and you can throw it in the garbage, because just like your daughter who's mad about the Magnetels, you get to be mad about your day and have your feelings too. And that's okay. And you can say, guess what, guys? It's movie day. It's pizza night and movie day, and we're going to bed late and you don't have to take baths, and we're taking the path of least resistance because it's too damn hard if you don't some days. And that's okay. We're not going to eat vegetables. We're going to make it easy. We're having ice cream and great.
I often find those days too that we do that. Those are probably like the best days that,
right?
For me, I'm like, wow, like I was on the verge of a breakdown all day and we watched TV all day. But for my daughter, those are like, you know, those are the days that she's going to look back on and be like, oh my God, we set the living room up as like a movie theater. And I try to think back to like my own childhood that, like, you know, when you look back at the points, like, we're not going to remember every single flawed moment or every single great moment. So I just try to, you know, and I know there's the whole, you know, if you're practicing conscious parenting, like, you know, that 80-20 rule, like 80% of the time you get to kind of.
No, 60.
You know, oh, is it 60?
That you makes only me, have to do it right 60% of the time.
I've been doing 80%. So I'm literally going to go back upstairs and watch
TV. Take it down. 60%. There's a new study that says 60% is good enough. And guess what?
No wonder I'm also stressed out.
Yes. Forgive yourself. Mess up. It's normal to be dysregulated. That is not abnormal. We cannot be fully regulated all the time. I yell at my kids. I do the wrong thing. And I've been doing this for 10 years. So don't beat yourselves up. It's impossible to be perfect at this.
And I think so often when we hear like the terms that, you know, gentle parenting, peace, you know, whatever kind of label or term, I think so many people go into that you have to be perfect and it has to work all the time. Because there was a time that all of our friends and family, like, I'm pretty vocal about how I parent. I have conversations. I have a lot of friends with kids. So, you know, we share. And there's nothing worse than, you know, those big feelings and those meltdowns, they usually happen around other people. And you feel like you have, you know, 18 sets of eyes looking at you and how you're going to correct this. Mm-hmm. And I find like sometimes I'll just like walk over to a friend and, you know, blubber some swear words. And sometimes they look at me like, what? And it's like, yeah, like I'm not, just because, you know, my daughter sleeps in bed and I don't hit, I try not to yell. And it doesn't mean I don't lose it sometimes, you know, like you can still mess up. And for me, it's all about the repair, kind of where I go from there and really trying to do that 180 of your day.
I mean, it's hard. Parenting is really, really, really hard. It takes you down to your knees. I think it brings up all your triggers. It puts yourself, you know, you're mirrored by your kids. There's so many going on. The stakes are so high. You're trying to like grow an adult. It's a lot. It's too much for anyone, I think.
Especially when you're not only parenting the child in front of you, but parenting the child within. I know we've done episodes on that in the past, and so many people resonate with that, you know, I'm trying to be a parent when like I never had that and I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah,
that
you don't know how to be the connected parent because you didn't have one. And that's why I think it's so important to say, okay, yeah, I need some tools. I need help. That's what I did. I was like, I need help. I don't know what I'm doing.
And I think that's so important. That's something we talk about quite a bit, is asking for help. You know, for Adriana, who is, you know, a single mom and not always having that help, like that's really difficult too, because it's like you need it, and it takes more than one person to support a mom and to, you know, raise a child. So I really enjoyed this conversation. I feel like I've gotten so much out of it. I was able to kind of learn and grow. And I know our listeners who are kind of in the thick of motherhood really will take a lot. But before we go, I know you talked a little bit about some of your webinars and courses that you have coming up. Could you talk a bit more about where everyone can find everything and all of the fun links?
Mostly I'm on Instagram and you can find me there. And my bio link has a link tree with a bunch of stuff on it. In there right now are two courses. One's the yelling course and one's the understanding big emotions course. I also work with clients one-on-one. That's kind of my favorite work to do, is working with people and couples one-on-one, just to kind of dig deeper into our own inner child and where our triggers are, and then building tools. You can find me on Facebook too, and my podcast, the Peace and Parenting Podcast, which is, I think I have 140 45 episodes. So there's a lot of good information there, a lot of stuff on connection.
What would a one-on-one service look like? Like if a family wanted to reach out and is having, you know, a hurdle or an issue that they need to work through, what does that look like?
So I do 6 or 8 or 10 week sessions. And I really shy away from just doing one session only because I feel like that's not a way to get to this deeper work, and that you got to really spend the time getting into the nuance of your family. And I really need the time to, you know, hear stories and get to know you and your kids so that we can really figure out what's going on, because the dynamics can be quite confusing and it takes some time to unravel them. There's 6 or 8 or 10 weeks, and then often my clients will stay on for another 6 or 8 or 10 weeks until we get them to a place where they're like my client said to me yesterday, she's like, I'm so sad, but I don't think I need you anymore. And I was like, well, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah, that's the end goal there. That's what I want. And then before we go, we ask all of our guests, what is your go-to coffee order?
I drink tea.
Oh gosh. So many guests always are telling us, actually, I drink tea. And it's like, no, I need to do like a pre-screening in the email that
they
we send. That like
if they drink so, yeah. tea. I drink chai tea latte is my favorite, or regular just chai tea.
Okay. All right. That's all right. We'll allow it.
I'll drink a dirty chai, which has a shot of espresso in it.
I actually just recently learned what that was. I didn't know for the longest time. Somebody submitted it on Instagram when I said, like, what's your coffee order? And I was like, well, how do I not know? I'm not a tea drinker. I just want the shot of espresso. I don't need the tea. So, but thank you, Michelle, again, so much for joining. Sure. This has been, I know we've been, you know, in talks for a while and we've been wanting to do this episode. And we even said before we hit record, each of these topics that we discussed could have been a whole episode in themselves. So I really appreciate you, you know, giving us the overview and giving, you know, our listeners and parents kind of something to work towards and grow on. And guys, like I said, go ahead and follow her on Instagram. The reels there, I have lots of them saved for when I'm working through those big emotions with my daughter, kind of just sometimes having an outside source, just saying, hey, you're doing a great job, even though you know that really makes all the difference. So Michelle, thank you again so much.
Thank you. I'm so glad I was here. And thank you for having me.